the business.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Sing it, Alan.
Diddy-dum.
Episode 223. 223. 233, I'm sorry.
You're fired, that's it.
I'm out of here,
You're
man.
You're flagged, no more for you.
Don't worry, we have a replacement for him lined up.
Yep, we were just looking for a reason, Pat, and
we're all replaceable at the end of the day.
You finally gave us a reason, so this is just your notice that today on this particular tech show, we're going to replace Pat with a Brian Bagnall.
There you go.
All right.
Now, Brian wrote one of my favorite books of all time on technology and computers. Brian wrote On the Edge, the Spectacular Rise and Fall of Commodore, and we had him on a while back. How long has it been, Brian? Do you even know?
Has it been published? I think 2005 is when it came out.
Who were you on the show? Was it last year? I think it was last year. Was it even 2006? I don't remember. I'll have to look it up.
My memory goes back about a couple of weeks. I think that's the limit of my memory.
Right. Well, we're not going to talk about Commodore, even though we all love Commodore. Tonight, we're going to talk about LEGO Mindstorms. You wrote another book, Maximum LEGO Mindstorms, right? Building Robots with Java Brains.
That's right, yep. That's actually the
September
second book.
September 13th, 2006, as a matter of fact.
There you go. September 2006. So it's been a while.
That's right.
So tell us about LEGO Mindstorms. Can you give us just a little bit of an overview of what they are, what they do, and what you can do with them?
Basically, LEGO Mindstorms is the overall concept that LEGO came out with for a series of different robot kits. Like, there's no particular kit called LEGO Mindstorms, but under LEGO Mindstorms, they have a kit called the an NXT kit, which is the latest one that they came out with. And there's sort of been a bunch of little kits that they dabbled around with that weren't really all that successful. And the one that sort of started it all was back in 1998 with a kit called a little brick called the RCX brick, which is probably pretty familiar to a lot of people. It's the yellow brick, and it's got the little yellow little Lego studs on top, and a small microcontroller in it, a little bit of memory, and different ports that you can sort of have hook up motors to, and also there's some input ports for that you can hook up a few sensors to. So that's the older kit. And then they came out with a newer kit in like end of 2006 is when they came out, or sort of maybe it was more middle of 2006 they came out with their latest version of that.
Now, what do these kits sell for?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think the new one sells for around $350, and the older one, you could probably find it very cheap on places like eBay, but I think the older one sold for maybe $250 back then, like when it was brand new, just released in 98 and 99. I think it would have been about $250. But the it's a little more now, but better technology.
So they're somewhat expensive toys, but you can do quite a bit with them, right?
Yeah, the expensive part is probably one of the reasons why a lot of like the age group for it is pretty old. I think, like, you know, the average user, I think, is around 30 years old or something. And I don't think Lego, when Lego released it, I thought that they probably thought it was going to be, you know, just for teenagers to use, basically. But it's got a it's got a big following with people of all ages that use it.
Now, let me ask you, I assume they have it has its own programming language, right?
Yeah, it comes with a thing called NXTG. That's what the like the newest one comes with that. And it's a purely graphical programming interface. Like NXTG stands for, like the G stands for graphical. And I haven't used that a whole lot. Like I did use it to try a few things. And it's actually, as far as, like, I don't know if anyone here has tried programming graphically before, but it's kind of an interesting thing. And it's got some drawbacks, of course, because you can only fit so many, when you're using graphics, you know, only so much will fit on your monitor. So I don't find it as powerful as, you know, programming with a text-based language. But it's not bad, actually. Like, it's pretty powerful and pretty robust.
Now, is that Windows only, or do they also have a version, I guess, that runs on Mac?
Yeah, the software that LEGO released works with Mac and Windows. No Linux with that NXTG language. But, of course, you can get all kinds of different languages that the open source community has come up with.
Which brings us to your contribution.
Sure. Yeah, the project that I'm on is called... I call it Lejos. Some people call it Lejos because it's a Spanish word. That's L-E-J-O-S. And, we originally did that, I think, 2000 would have been the first iteration of Lejos. And, it's just a very tiny Java virtual machine that runs on the NXT brick. And you can run, like, we had our older version that runs on the small yellow RCX brick. The whole brick only had 32 kilobytes of memory total. So we had to cram the whole Java virtual machine into about 16 kilobytes so that there'd be enough room left over to store your user programs, you know, like your Java programs that you'd upload to it. And the newer version, the NXT brick, has 256 kilobytes of flash RAM and 64 kilobytes of just regular RAM. And so it's, you know, we don't have to be so careful with how we use our memory. So there's basically just a lot, we have a bigger programming interface for it, more classes, and it's just a lot more functional than the older one was on the RCX brick.
Now, the classes that you guys put together, I guess they're extensions of existing classes that are specific to what you can do on these things?
Yeah. It's we sort of tried to copy the, I don't know if you guys are Java programmers. Are there any Java programmers here?
I do a little bit.
Okay.
He's the only
one. So you're familiar with the Java... like the standard API that comes with the Java developer kit.
Yep.
And we tried to copy that one as much as we could, you know, in terms of having the same signature, like the method signatures, same class names and all that stuff. But it's sort of a subset. Like the standard one has all kinds of classes for graphical widgets that you'd be using on a big PC with a big color monitor and, you know, it's got all kinds of classes. Ours is just a slimmed-down version of that API. And then we sort of have a special parts that we made, you know, totally original API that you can use for motors and sensors and all that kind of stuff.
I would imagine most of the stuff would be pertaining to, like, movement, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the main reason why people probably get the brick is so that they can turn the motors, you know, like the motors is really the central part. And we've got a bunch of classes that can use with the motors. The motors that come with the NXT, they have a built-in position sensor in there, like a tachometer, and it can tell, you know, what position the motor is in at any given time. And so you can turn the motor a certain number of degrees and have it stop. You can control the speed on the motor, or just, you know, count revolutions, you know, tell it to revolve like 10 times and it'll stop, you know, exactly when you want it to stop. So we made our own API that you can control all that. You can read what the tachometer is at and change speed and that sort of thing.
So it wasn't very difficult then to port it over to the processor that the brick runs. What is it? It's an ARM processor, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a ARM 7, I guess, is the type of processor, and it was actually I'd say it was actually kind of hard in a way. When we originally were sort of planning on porting it over, we were waiting for Lego to release their code, because they actually did something different this time. They released the code for that runs on the firmware, you know, right on the brick. They released that as open source, or at least they said they were going to release it. And we were kind of waiting around for them to get around to doing that. And months went by, you know, after the date that they said they were going to release it. And so we started thinking about, you know, trying to hack it ourselves, but finally they did release that code. And we used that. We didn't actually like just take their open source code and copy and paste it. We actually kind of used it for a reference to come up with our sort of our firmware code that's programmed in C, because the Java virtual machine, you know, that part of it is all programmed in C code. And what you would call our system, I guess, like say the file system, that part of it's programmed in Java. A lot of the logic for controlling the motors is actually in Java, but then there's a lot of it that's also in native C.
Now, speaking of C, other people have ported other languages to this.
Yeah, there's a for the last version, the RCX brick. I think there was about sort of four major languages that just various hackers made for it. There was one called Not Quite C, that one actually was a way that you could compile code and then upload it to the regular Lego firmware. So it wasn't really a firmware replacement. You know, like it just used the same software that comes on the brick when you open the box and take the brick out. And then some people did actual firmware replacements that replaced the software Lego had on there. There was, I think, a Fortran. Someone did, like, Fortran that would run on there. And then there's, of course, Legos. That was a firmware replacement. And someone had another C language environment on there. I can't remember the name, actually, right now. And then this generation, like for the NXT brick, there's actually about, I think, 10, around 10 different programming environments that you can use on it. And, you know, most of them, I think a lot of them are just use the C language. Then we've got our Java language, of course, with Legos. And I think one person did it in Lua.
So let me ask you, how does Lego feel about everybody porting all these different languages to it? Are they cool with, you know, the community doing what you're doing and, you know, everybody doing their own hacks to it?
Yeah, they were originally really worried about that when the RCX came out. And I think they were even kind of considering legal action against people who hacked the brick, because they didn't release any specs on the brick, didn't tell anyone how to do things with it. And there was a guy named, a guy from Hawaii, Kakoa, I think his name was. He went in there and just somehow figured out all the opcodes and everything, and that opened it up for everyone else. But But Lego, I think, saw that the hacker community was really driving sales for their product and making it a lot more interesting product than it originally was. And so they sort of supported it. I wouldn't say they supported it back then, but I think they liked what was going on. And this generation with the Lego NXT brick, they actually got a lot of the hackers to go down to Denmark, where Lego is, and they were asking them, what would you like to see in the next generation? And when it was finally released, like I mentioned before, they actually released the software that was on the brick, as open source software, gave lots of documentation for anyone who wanted to try to create their own firmware or really get in there and start hacking the thing. So they were pretty friendly towards everyone this time.
So I saw that, I guess originally their intention was, what, like an educational type tool for students learning how to do basic programming and robotics concepts? But it really has grown to, become like a real, real hackable device that, adults play with and do all sorts of cool and interesting things with.
Yeah, the background on that, I think it was a guy named Seymour Papert or something like that. And, he was originally, I guess, sort of developing that concept. I mean, it is kind of weird when you think about it, like, a computer and Lego bricks, it doesn't seem like that would be a good fit. But it actually, Lego is actually pretty good because of that Technic line of parts that they have, where there's gears and beams and wheels and all kinds of stuff like that. You can build pretty functional mechanical things. And then, of course, you get motors in there and get them controlled by a computer or a embedded device, and you can really start making some pretty cool stuff with that. So yeah, I think it was this Seymour Papert. I think he was at MIT, and I think he maybe came up with a concept that he called Mindstorms, and wanted to get kids experimenting with it and everything. And as it turns out, kids and adults and everyone else really enjoys it.
Now, is there a third-party market for, hardware? Are there other companies selling hardware that's compatible with these basic kits?
Yeah, that took off in the last generation with RCX, where you started to see little small, I'm pretty sure they were all sort of web-based companies, people who probably had a real job and were just doing this on the side, where they'd make up some little sensors and stuff that you could hook up. Because the RCX only had maybe four or five different types of sensors that Lego supplied. I think Lego had a thermometer or whatever, temperature sensor, a touch sensor. What else did they have? A light sensor was one. And a few others. And then, people wanted to have their robots able to sense more things than just that. So they started coming out with their own little sensors, little homebrew sensors. And I think, one of the most popular ones was the compass sensor. Because when you make a little robot with wheels and, you want it to kind of do a little navigating, it's pretty important that it knows which direction it's pointed at any given time. And so the compass sensor was pretty popular. And also a range finder. A lot of people came out with different range-finding devices so that the robot would know that it's, about to bump into a wall or you could do other things with it, get it to, the 3D scan using a range sensor. So they came out with those homebrew things with the last generation. And this generation, a couple of companies have really taken it, I would say, a lot more serious than they did with the last one. And they're really coming out with a huge range of sensors and devices that'll you can do things like expand the number of ports that the brick has. Like right now, the brick has, if you buy it right out of open it right out of the box, you can hook up three motors to it or four sensors, and they have devices that'll expand the number of motors or sensors that you can hook up to a single brick. There's lots of good sensors out there and stuff like that.
Has anyone tried hooking up one of these things to a GPS device?
Yeah, I just programmed last month, a little bit of code that lets it connect to a Bluetooth GPS device. I bought one of those, there's a company called Holux, and they produce these neat little GPS units. They're about the size of a lighter. And we have some Bluetooth code. We actually just got our Bluetooth code and not too long ago, where we can do things like connect to different bricks. Like, you know, if you have two bricks or three bricks, you can kind of have them all talking to each other over Bluetooth. And once we had that in place, I just started experimenting with that, and I got it to extract the data from a Bluetooth GPS unit, which actually was pretty easy. Like, it just, these units, these GPS devices, they just kind of constantly spew out a whole stream of what they call NMEA sentences, something to do with, like, maritime navigation or something like that. And it just parses out all the data from there. You can get, like, the time off of the satellites. You can parse out coordinates. You know, like, it'll triangulate your position. You can get heading and stuff like that as well. You parse that right off the GPS unit. So it's, you know, I don't know how useful this GPS data is to a brick, actually, because it might not have the kind of resolution you'd want for a little tiny robot, you know, that's going to, like, your robot kind of needs to know within plus or minus a few centimeters where it is, whereas the GPS device just doesn't produce data that has that kind of accuracy. But it's people might be able to find things to do with it, so we put it in. And it actually hasn't even been released yet. Like, it's just on our in Subversion right now. But our next release is going to have that available to everyone, and hopefully they'll do some interesting things with it.
I would imagine with Bluetooth you can do quite a lot of, you know, interesting things. You could communicate with a cell phone.
Yep.
Keyboards. I mean, there's all sorts of funky things you could do with it. The next question I have is Wi-Fi. Is there anything you could do with Wi-Fi with these things?
Well, it only does Bluetooth. You can't somehow receive or transmit a Wi-Fi signal. Although I think it is on the same, like, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are both on the same range. Thing inside, it has a chip called the BlueCore chip, and that chip really only lets you communicate with Bluetooth, so it's not really open to Wi-Fi. But there's I've been doing all kinds of research on Bluetooth this month just to see what it would be capable of, and there's a thing called OBEX. Like, it's like a protocol that...
Yes, I'm familiar with OBEX. That's, you're able to push files back and forth.
That's right, yeah. And once OBEX is in place, there's a Bluetooth wireless protocol where it'll kind of actually act like a network. So as long as you have a Bluetooth dongle plugged into your computer, and, you know, as long as your NXT brick is within the range of your computer, which is about 10 meters, or sometimes I've heard, you know, you can go up to 100 meters away, then you should be able to tap into a network and do all kinds of networking things. But I should say that we don't have that code programmed yet. We're still sort of playing around with it. So we'll see, but I'm really hoping that we can do stuff like that.
Yeah, I've used OBEX with connecting a cell phone to my Linux machine with a Bluetooth dongle. You're able to go in there, and it's almost like, you know, just doing like an SSH across, you know. You're able to push and pull files back and forth.
Yeah, like if we, right now we sort of got this custom software that to upload it to the, you know, if you program something and want to upload it, it's a command line based thing, and you just send one file and it goes into our little file system directory. And yeah, if we start doing stuff like OBEX, then we might have it where you don't really need to do that. Like, you could just maybe do some sort of drag and drop on your lap, on your computer, you know, drag and drop the file into the directory and, you know, have it go through OBEX instead, or, you know, maybe if we add, we don't, our file system actually, doesn't have directories yet. It's just like one main directory, no file folders. And, you know, if we do put in OBEX, you know, it might make sense to put in folders in our file system, and then you could just drag your program into whatever file folder you wanted. Or, I'm not sure. We're thinking about a lot of that stuff right now. So.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Bluetooth is fun. There's quite a bit you can do with it. So let me ask you, what are some of the cool, interesting projects that you have in your book, Brian?
Wait. Can it spread viruses too? Can you like make a little robot that would spread viruses by Bluetooth?
Like anthrax virus or what?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah, are you talking about that kind of virus?
No, you know they were for a while.
Don't you have to run Windows on it to get it to do that?
No, it could be a carrier.
Carrier, yeah, you just pass it along to Windows machines.
All those Bluetooth devices there that were susceptible, the smartphones and stuff that were susceptible to worms and viruses there for a little while and exploitations.
Stop being so evil, Dan.
That would be cool to have a little like Lego device that go through and pwn everybody in the mall.
There is something actually to what you're saying about spreading viruses. I don't know if it's really possible, but like what I did, I happened to have my brick with me, and I was just going through, like, you know, figuring out the Bluetooth stuff at that time. And I was in the airport, and you know, I noticed a lot of people had cell phones, so I kind of like one of the routines in there searches for different Bluetooth devices in the area and lists them, and then, you know, you try to see if you can pair up with them or not. Because like a lot of Bluetooth devices, they just use, there's like a four number code. I think they call it a PIN number.
Yep, PIN number.
0000.
Yeah, a lot of them are defaulted as that, yeah.
Yeah, there are, a lot of them use 0000.
1234.
Or 1234. And, yeah, I was kind of, you know, trying to see if I could connect up with them and at least get a data stream going with them. And I think that would be possible. I didn't get lucky at the airport.
It is possible. I saw some video on the internet where this guy had a cracking tool where he was able to, from like across the street, sniff Bluetooth devices at some internet cafe, and he was able to see, like, you know, SMS messages going over people's cell phones and stuff.
I don't doubt that, yeah. If you were a hacker and, I don't know about getting a virus on somebody's cell phone or whatever, that might be pretty tricky to do, but you might be able to pair up with the device and then maybe try to, you know, I don't know what you could do. Once, depends what the device is, I guess, but maybe try to do things.
He was also able to record audio streams, people talking back and forth through their Bluetooth headsets.
Really? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, let me go see if I can find that, and I'll post it on the RC.
Now, that was like a YouTube video, I think it was.
Yeah, it was, yeah, or a Google video. I forget which one it was.
Yeah, that would be amazing. The one thing that this thing's got the blue core 4 chip inside of it, and we can't do audio streams with the NXT. That's the only part of Bluetooth that's sort of off limits to us. But, you know, OBEX and wireless LANs and all that stuff we should be able to do, I think.
So going back to the projects in the book, what are some of the cool projects you have in your book that people can do?
Okay, I guess one of the things that I've always been interested with Lego was trying to get sort of accurate navigation where you could tell the robot to go to a certain set of coordinates and it would just drive there and, you know that that's where it was. And so navigation's been something that I've been very interested in. So it's got a few different navigation programs in there. Like there's one type of navigation that just uses the tachometer, the built-in tachos in the motors. And, you know, it can tell, you know, just by the number of wheel rotations that are made, how far it's traveled and where it is at any given time. And then there's, if you get a compass sensor, which is actually available from LEGO. You can use that for navigation. And we've made it pretty easy to do those sort of things. Like, we actually, instead of you having to use, you know, all kinds of geometry calculations to figure out navigation, you know, like using tangent, sine, and cosine and all that, we programmed some navigation classes. And you just tell it, you know, what's the size of the wheel or the diameter of the wheel that's on your robot, what's the distance between the two wheels, and then it takes care of the rest. And, you know, it's a very easy to use class where you can just use, call a method like go to, you know, in brackets 100 comma 200 or whatever, and it'll go to that spot on the floor all by itself. So we've made that aspect really easy to use. And there's a, I think there's 12 robots total that you can build in the book. Things like arms, there's like a little chess-playing arm that, you know, you set the chessboard up and the arm kind of hovers over it. And you can tell it, you know, which square to go to, and it'll bend down and pick up a piece and move it to another square. I've got a walking robot. That's the robot that's on the cover there. And just... can't remember all the projects. I think there's one, you know, you can, no, there's one project where you can make the robot talk, and that's by, like, the actual software to generate the speech is on your PC, but it generates the sound and then uploads it to the brick through Bluetooth and gets the brick to play it. And there's also a project there on, sound recognition or voice recognition, actually, where you can say words to it and it'll tell what you're saying and, you know, obey your commands through voice. Anyways, 12 projects in total. I can't remember what they all are. It's been a while.
I found that video for the guys eavesdropping on people's cell phones through Bluetooth. I'll post it on the RSA.
Yeah, it's. I have high hopes for what we can do with Bluetooth. Actually, like, you know, I hope we can do all this. But you know, like you were mentioning earlier, there's Bluetooth joysticks out there, and I think it'd be really neat to be able to use a Bluetooth joystick to control the brick. You know, you could even use. I know the Wiimote, the Nintendo Wiimote, is Bluetooth, so you could use that to control your robot if you wanted. You could do different things, like make a robot arm and somehow have the joystick control that. I think the Sony PlayStation 3 also has a Bluetooth controller. So it'd be neat, you know, to be able to have people be able to drive around the robots using that. And what are some other good Bluetooth devices out there? Have you guys ever seen a Bluetooth printer on the market?
I thought I have. Don't they usually like sell Bluetooth printers in conjunction with or as like add-ons to what's that device? The hand palms Trio. Don't they have like some kind of Bluetooth printer to go with that?
Probably one of those mini printers, I would guess.
I wouldn't doubt it. I'll go look right now for you. Probably cost an arm and a leg. Probably build a better one out of Legos.
That's right, yeah.
That would be cool, a printer made out of Legos.
That's one area, actually, that... this is like, you know, I shouldn't even be talking about making Bluetooth devices hook up to it, because we haven't even, you know, we've got, like, you can connect with NXT bricks, you can connect with your computer through Bluetooth, and you can connect with the GPS device right now, and we don't have any of the other stuff programmed, so I probably shouldn't even be talking about that, and I really shouldn't be talking about one thing that I'd like to do, which is have the NXT brick sort of become the device, like a Bluetooth device, because there's like a real Bluetooth printer standard. It's like a very simple, you know, printer standard that'll output text, to a printer or whatever. And so if you made a little, if you made your own little printer, you could have, you know, this the thing that you built act as though it was a regular Bluetooth printer. And your computer would, you know, recognize it as a Bluetooth device and, you know, without any drivers, because I know there's like a very simple Bluetooth protocol that's for printing. And, you know, that's some of, like, we really want to get into that kind of stuff, although, like I say, way too early to be having high hopes for that, I think. Or make your own, you know, if you made your own little Bluetooth joystick, or made a little, like, Lego joystick and wanted to control a game, you know, through Bluetooth. You know, like, Bluetooth has a HID profile, which is the human interface device. And so if you made your own funky controller out of Lego, you know, maybe you could have that act like a regular joystick and actually play, you know, video games using this weird controller that you made out of Lego. So that's something that we're kind of exploring right now to see if that's possible. But it's too soon to tell, actually, right now, if we can actually do that.
Just so you know, I did look up Bluetooth printers. They range in price from, like, a couple $100 up, but Home Depot has a Canon photo printer with Bluetooth for $75.
That's a heck of a price.
Yeah, it is. You can print from any Bluetooth-enabled device, your digital camera, your camcorder, whatever. From your Bluetooth-enabled camera phone.
That's one. I would love to, for you know, to take Legos and just you know open up all kinds of devices like that to it. It's like I'd be very curious, you know, what people could do. Like say, a Bluetooth camera. I don't know. Maybe we could get it to accept data from a Bluetooth camera, and you know, maybe people could do interesting things with that. Or, you know,
what idea would be to use a cell phone as a remote control to just drive it around.
Yeah. Actually, that should be one of the first things that we do, is try to, you know, get it so you can do stuff with your cell phone. Because I think, you know, a heck of a lot of people, there's a lot of cell phones out there, and I think most of them support Bluetooth. So that's, like, a device that people have, and it's sitting around ready to interact with this thing. So, yeah, we should definitely, that should be, like, one of the first devices we add support for, I think.
We had a question come in from the IRC. Oh, and somebody wants us to send a shout-out to Sonny in Nevada. But anyway, question came into the IRC about programming these devices as to whether or not they have a VNRAM on the device so that the program will still exist in the memory after a power loss, or do you have to reprogram it should there be a power loss?
Yeah, actually... it'll stay on there. It's got everything in flash, so you don't have to worry about that. You know, it's got 256 kilobytes of flash, and you upload your programs into there, like right on the file system, and yeah, they'll just stay there.
That's cool. What is the coolest thing you've ever seen somebody do with this?
I'd have to say the Segway that someone made. Like, and actually, it's gone through a lot of different versions. There was a Segway that someone made out of the RCX brick, and it used two light sensors to try to keep itself balanced, and that was pretty cool. But it, you know, it keeps getting better with the technology, and with the NXT, there's a guy, his name's Takashi. And he's actually the developer of something called OSEC, which is like another type of firmware. But I saw a thing he programmed. It's a little Segway that you can actually, you know, drive it around, and you know it'll go forward and backward, and you can really, like, you know, with a Segway, you start hitting it to see if you can make it fall over, and you can really be rough with this thing, and it'll keep its balance, and you can make it, you know, steer, goes left or right or whatever. You can drive it over obstacles, you know, like a book, you know, and stuff like that, and it'll keep its balance. So I think that was pretty impressive. And There's a lot of other stuff. I've seen like a Rubik's Cube solver where the thing sits there, you know, it's got a camera that scans all the different faces, and then it just starts grinding away, and it'll solve the thing in as few moves as possible, I think. There's all kinds of cool stuff.
Do people use these things as battle bots, or are they too expensive? I guess people don't want to destroy their stuff.
You're talking like have death matches with these things.
Yeah, like someone attached like a buzzsaw or something, and you know,
it's a Lego device. Right off. I mean, if you like turn it too fast, pieces will probably fly off.
Well, that's not fun. I want destruction.
Well, I've never seen anyone do that with Lego, to be honest. Like, I haven't even seen. I think I've seen sumo wrestling. That's one of the events at Brickfest, I think. And you know, so I've seen that, and like you said, parts will fall off. But I haven't seen any event where they actually go for like full destruction, where a buzzsaw cuts the thing in half or something, or sets it on fire or anything. That would be interesting, though.
I'd be upset if I spent all that money on a Lego Mindstorm and like put it in some kind of like competition and somebody set it on fire. That would stink.
Yeah.
That would smell,
is
too.
Is that still popular? I know they used to do BattleBots. That was like pretty popular going back so many years ago. It's kind of dropped off a bit, I think.
I think it probably dropped
is
off
Battle
on TV.
Is BattleBots a... yeah, is that a TV show or what is that?
I remember
that
seeing
was
it
a
on
TV.
TV.
Show.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was on like Spike there for a while.
There was actually two shows on. There was BattleBots and there was another knockoff show that was on another cable channel. But BattleBots I haven't seen in a while, and I'm sure the competitions still go on.
Yeah, okay. I think I do remember that from quite a while back, where it's like, you know, they're pretty big robots, eh? Like weighing 200 pounds and stuff like that.
They had different classes. They had the small toy dog size robots, like Chihuahua size, and then you know, you had the medium size, and then the heavy size that would kill people.
Yeah, most of those weren't robots in the sense of being able to move on their own. They were all radio controlled.
Yeah,
they were just big RC models that people beat the shit out of.
You want a robot that can do it and in independent operation.
Yeah, there wasn't any exactly. Logic built into those things, I don't think.
Crush, kill,
yeah,
destroy.
Yeah, that to me seems like that would be the big draw, would be, you know, seeing how smart you could make it and see if it could actually destroy, you know, find and destroy another robot. I don't know. You might be onto something. That might be the next...
I mean, you could insulate the brick. The thing is, the brick needs connections to the servos, right?
Yeah.
That's the only thing. So you couldn't insulate the brick like instead of like a battle hardened cage or something.
Yeah, I think you could do that. As soon as you start putting like these things, you know, this thing runs off of 6 AA batteries, so I don't think you could expect it to wield like a chainsaw or something like that. You know, but I don't think you could get a heck of a lot of destruction off of 6 AA batteries. Come to think of it. I don't even think you could raise a heavy hammer or something, you know.
Well, we'll have to figure out how to power with a diesel engine.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You know the size of the Lego construct you'd have to make to hold a diesel engine?
You just have a fire. You just have the servos firing, you know, off little air cartridges and stuff, so they move, you know, air cylinders. Just one with a spike on the end of it. That's all you need. Like a hammer.
It would be possible, I'm sure. Yeah.
We got some evil thoughts going on.
Can you make Mindstorms fly?
Oh, let's see. I did a calculation on the RCX brick to see if it was light enough to go up with, you know, those little helium-filled remote control airships?
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever seen those. I think Radio Shack used to have them, and once in a while you see them around.
Yeah, I've seen them.
And, it's just, that thing was, the RCX brick with 6 AA batteries is just way too heavy for that amount of helium to lift. So I couldn't figure out a way to do it that way.
How about a miniature nuclear reactor?
I was thinking the same thing. The only thing is you would have to get a nuclear fuel for it. That might be a little tricky.
And this is for what? What would you be doing with a nuclear reactor?
We're sending it to Canada.
It's for our evil plans to take over the world.
I would say it's the show's plan to take over the world.
I hear you can get
like
cheap,
a deep space probe.
Yeah, we can get cheap, cheap nuclear waste from like Russia and stuff like that. You know, they're cast-offs, so it might be a market somewhere.
What about aquatics? Can it do any aquatic stuff, or is it too? Is it enough airtime?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people do that.
Oh, yeah?
I think you put it in a baggie and put a couple of elastic bands around, you know, any cables that are coming out. I don't know, maybe you got to go a little more heavy duty than just elastic bands, but it's something like that. And, I've seen people do, like, sort of submarine-type things. I think someone did try to make, like, a little fish that, they're trying to, whatever, imitate the motion that a fish uses to swim using Lego. I've seen that kind of stuff.
A school of Lego piranhas.
Yeah.
Because last week we were talking to the Gumsticks founder, and someone had done a research project where they basically had a flying computer network where it was a bunch of miniature computers, you know, built using these Gumstick kits, where they were flying around and they were all networked and communicating with each other.
And what was it called? Gumstick?
Gumsticks, yeah.
Okay, so it's like the size of a pack of gum or something.
Exactly. You can listen to last week's episode to get all the details.
Okay. Yeah, the flying, that would be an interesting area, I think. But every electronic device, and I've bought a few like just to see what they're capable of, like say those little helicopters, radio-controlled helicopters that'll fly indoors. Those things are just so light, and you'd need a really light power source, you know, if you wanted to start trying stuff like that. So that I think that's off limits for now, unless you got, if you got a gas-powered motor, like a, you know, a gas-powered radio-controlled helicopter or something, you might be able to try stuff like that. But you'd probably, like, the first time you tested it, it would probably self-destruct, I would think. Because, to have a computer controlling flight like that and everything, it's got to be reacting, you know, to what's in front of it, what's behind it. You know, you'd have to have sensors pointing in every direction. You'd probably have to have some sort of gyro, which they actually have for the NXT kit, that would tell it, you know, what it's, if it's level or not, you know, what the X, Y, Z tilt is at. So, yeah, I don't know. It probably would be possible if you got some really heavy-duty gear in there.
So I guess it's only limited by your imagination and your wallet.
Pretty much, yeah. The sensors and stuff aren't so bad. Once you get the main kit, the sensors, I think they pretty much run around maybe $30 or $40 each. And, I mean, you can get some cool sensors. Like I just mentioned, the gyro is a really neat one. And you're limited by the types of parts. Like, the old kit actually came out, I think, with better parts than the new kit. The new kit comes out with a lot less than the other one had. And, this one's lacking tank treads, which everybody loves, you know, building robots with tank treads on them because it looks so cool. You know, look at those Terminator robots. And LEGO didn't include those with the kit this time for some reason. There's a few parts. There's like a differential that they included with their old kit. They don't include that this time for some reason. And there's quite a variety of parts. You'd be surprised what you could do. But you're limited to, say, like the number of wheels. There's only four wheels in the kit. You can't build some crazy six-wheeled thing that would be like a Mars rover or whatever. So you're a little bit limited. You know, you can always, you know, go online and buy, if you want some kind of strange Lego part to do something with. You can go online and buy them pretty easily.
Now, you said that there's festivals that people go to every once in a while. How often do they do those, and where do they do them?
Like Brickfest, that thing.
Right.
You're talking about, okay. Yeah, Brickfest, actually, I'm not terribly familiar. I think it's like a once-a-year thing. And I think it's held around, like, end of the year, winter sometime. And, yeah, those things, I think they do competitions, even, like, organized competitions, where they, one of the things they do, it's called, like, the Great Gumball Machine, where there's all these gumballs that are sort of streaming out of this, at the start of the thing. You know, like, say it's spewing out, like, one gumball every second or whatever. And then people will put their own little contraption as part of this huge machine. You know, all it does is it takes the gumball, transports it a bit, and then flips it off to the next machine. So they have, like, a big line of these things just transporting gumballs, you know, all around this circuit. I know that's one of the interesting things they do. I think it's just, you know, a good gathering of Lego people, Lego hobbyists, and they all kind of show off what they've done.
I would imagine people do some really crazy stuff at those events.
I've never been to one. But who knows? I think that may be sort of a younger crowd at that one, too, actually. I don't think it's quite the sort of hardcore hobbyists, but I'm not sure.
We had another question in the IRC a little while ago, and I don't want to forget to mention it to you, but there was a question as to whether there is a book like 1001 Uses for Lego Mindstorms.
Pretty much every book has, you know, quite a few programs or quite a few projects that you can build in it. There was one sort of a very popular book from the last iteration that was by a guy named Mario Ferrari, and his book was just packed full of all kinds of great ideas that you could do with Lego Mindstorms. That was with the yellow RCX brick, though. And they re-released that book, but it wasn't really with Mario Ferrari anymore, so I'm not sure if it's quite as good as the other book was. But yeah, you know, you look online, there's all kinds of books, I'm sure, that have lots of projects in them and things like that.
I have one book here. It's called Maximum Lego Mindstorms, Building Robots with Java Brains by Brian Bagnall. That has a bunch of projects in it. And there's some nice pictures in
there.
You talk a little bit about geometry and development environment, and you have some projects with some interesting diagrams on how to put the devices together.
Yep. Patrick, you said you were a little bit into Java, right?
Yeah.
Are you, like, how often would you say you use it?
Several times a week I play around with it. I do stuff. I use it at work.
Okay. Do you use the Java Micro Edition at all for programming cell phones and stuff?
No, I haven't done any of that yet. I strictly do just, like,
okay,
GUI apps, interfacing with, like, databases, that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, we, the new NXT brick, it's different from the old one in that it's got a much larger pixel display. You know, like LCD, but it's got, you know, tons of pixels on it. And the old one was just, it had, like, little number segments and a few little graphics, but you couldn't really do much for the display. So with this one, what we did with our Legos API is we added the package javax.microedition.lcdui, which is, if you use Java, that's where they keep all the little widgets and stuff. And so we programmed, we've got widgets in there for, like, an alert box, different gauges. You can display images, lists, you know, kind of the usual types of widgets that you'd see on a cell phone. So that's one thing. That's a feature that might be interesting to some people out there if they're into Java programming or sort of micro edition type programming.
Well, let me ask you, do you have a virtual machine that you could run, run a virtual Legos Mindstorm robot inside of?
It's sort of like if you haven't bought the kit yet, but you want to sort of play around with it.
Yeah, you want to prototype it before, exactly, before prototyping before you actually move the application to the device.
We've got sort of an emulator that, but it's not really like a emulator that users would use. It just sort of, it emulates the ARM7 and that sort of thing. But we don't. It doesn't have like a little screen, like you wouldn't see a screen, or you wouldn't really see visually. If you start, say you run your code on this emulator, you wouldn't really visually see anything happening. So not really, nothing very sophisticated on that level yet. If you're sort of, you don't want to really spend $350, but you're kind of wondering if you'd be interested in it. And, if you just want to learn more about it, I would say go to YouTube and, just look up Lego NXT, and there's a whole ton of YouTube videos that just show different robots people have made. And that might give, if there's anyone out there wondering if this would interest them, that might give you a good indication of, if this is the type of thing you want or not.
Cool. There's so much of embedded Linux out there and embedded devices in general nowadays, and it's pretty interesting stuff. It's like it's overwhelming,
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities with what you can do with it, and to be honest, there are possibilities coming with the Legos project. Like I think. Maybe we're around 90% done. 90% of everything we want is in there, but, there's still going to be more interesting things coming. And you can use, even though earlier in the program we mentioned you can't use the Lego software with this brick on Linux, you can use any of these other open source things with Linux. So, if you're a Linux programmer, this thing's wide open for you.
So, Brian, I don't think that you had mentioned this, but if somebody's interested in getting involved in, or starting out in Lego Mindstorms, where do you recommend they start? I mean, what is the price point that you would say a beginner would be at to just get their hands dirty and trying this stuff out, and what should they be looking for?
Oh, well, really, you have to start with the NXT kit, the $350 kit. So it is a pretty heavy investment. And once, it's more, if you can get that much money and buy it, then you should really start with just the Lego software. Especially if you're buying this for your kid, or if you're a kid who can somehow afford this, then that's where you should start, because Lego's made it really simple to program. And once you're sort of comfortable with how it works, how you upload things, how you make motors turn, plugging them in, maybe building a few simple robots, and you want to sort of get more advanced, then I would recommend going on to something like Legos, or if you're not interested in Java. There's a programming environment out there called Not Quite C that's really amazing. Got lots of good classes in there. Or whatever language, if you're like Lua or something, go with that. But yeah, I'd say just start with the basic software that actually comes in the package, because it's really easy to use. I think, if your kid's, fairly intelligent, you could probably go as low as, a 12-year-old could probably figure that out, I would think.
Oh, cool.
Not sure if that answered your question or not.
No,
a little choppy, but I tried my best.
That did. If you can lend me the money, I will get involved.
You could probably get them a lot cheaper secondhand from off of eBay, you know.
Probably.
You get these kids that get it for Christmas, and, you know, they forget about them after a month. You know, this time of year is probably a good time to go try to find one.
That's actually a really good suggestion. You probably could. Or, yeah, there's a thing called Lugnet, and that's got links to sort of a – there's like an eBay just for Lego. You know, if you're looking for Lego kits, you can go to that. You could probably find some deals there. Yeah, you know, yeah, I'm sure there's cheaper ways to get this stuff. eBay would probably be your best bet if you wanted to find a deal. That's a
Dan, if all else fails, you could do a smash and grab.
That's like a riot,
Lego Mindstorm NXX new in box, $168. $0.50.
Really?
You have 3 days and 18 hours left to buy.
Or if I can find somebody who can program.
Now everybody's going to go to that auction.
And if you want the original one, it's $87. Or excuse me, $57.
Hmm. Or
really?
You just have somebody program it for me to steal it.
For the big yellow one, yeah.
Post the link in the chat.
That's amazing.
Hold on.
Only $57?
Well, I'll put the...
Where's the seller, Romania?
I don't know. It doesn't say. Chicago. This is for the new in-box one.
This is the luckiest eBay seller, you know, in the history of eBay right now, right?
You could send Verbal over there to go get it.
Alan, didn't you learn from my mistake before? Tiny URL.
I don't... No. I just put the whole thing in there and you click on it.
Nice link.
Got another long one coming, too.
He'll get full price for that.
But if I'm my tiny URL, it. So the second one is for the RCX one.
Yeah.
The RCX is in Champagne.
Well, Brian, this is cool stuff. I have to say, Brian, the last episode we had you on was one of the most popular episodes. We got so much positive feedback from people about it. Everybody loved the Commodore stuff.
Yeah, Commodore just got a big lot of big following. I mean, the thing sold, I think, over or around 20 million, so there's just a lot of people out there for that.
Yeah, we had Bill Hurd on, and he was a blast.
Oh, you guys had Bill Hurd, eh?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, he was really good.
I went to, I don't know if you guys, we won't make this a Commodore show or anything, but I went to a talk last December in California where Jack Tramiel was actually giving a talk. And I saw Bill Hurd there. He was kind of mingling with all the Commodore people and eating hors d'oeuvres and that kind of thing. He's an interesting guy.
He seems to be a little more... more visible and out and about lately, Tramiel.
Yeah, I think I've seen one other interview on the internet that he did with someone, and then he did this thing at the Computer History Museum. So,
that's the video I saw.
Oh, you did see that, eh? Okay,
I saw that one.
I was right in that audience there. That was a good talk. What did you think of him? Did you think he was sort of a funny, charming kind of guy, or what impression did you get?
Well, he's an old guy, so who knows how he was, you know, back in the day, you know? I'm sure he's mellowed out a little bit.
I thought the interview was great, you know?
Yeah. That John Markoff from New York Times, I thought he did a really good job.
Good stuff. Well, Brian, we'll definitely have to have you back at some point. If you want to hang out, then just you know, while we go with other topics, we're going to probably talk about different things now. But you're more than welcome to hang out.
I'm going to go eat because I'm getting a little lightheaded right now. I haven't had supper yet.
It's not a good idea to drink beers without food in your stomach.
Yeah, it's been good talking to you guys.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
Oh, man, did you just see what Verbal did in the chat? Holy crap. He's a dead man. Did you see that? Now everybody's reading back.
I was going to say, yeah.
We'll sit here reading back at it.
Well, what did I miss?
He basically
this is Verbal
reminded
me of Gorkon?
This is Verbal reminded him of Gorkon.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
that's not nice.
Reminds you of a homeless man.
He's a dead man.
Yeah.
Verbal's gonna be sleeping on the couch tonight.
We won't be hearing him at any more shows
with the
for
fishes.
A while.
Oh. I don't know. I seen them both, guys, and what do you think? You've all seen them both too. I think she can take him. What do you think?
I think so too.
Yeah, I think she can take him. It's gonna be messy.
Poor guy. Poor wife. Poor Mrs. Verbal. Look at that. Gorkon's not even here, and he screwed everything up already.
Yep.
Speaking of that, where is he?
I don't know.
He's like blowing us
off. He's getting ready for Lug Radio Live, USA.
Must be.
Lug Radio. He's probably wearing his shirt right now. Like,
yeah.
Yep.
Like just sitting there on his bed.
We're working on
it.
That British accent.
Stroking his little John O picture, you know.
He's like, oh,
John O,
I can't wait.
The shrine. He's got 6 foot blow ups of those pictures that they did, those promo pictures. You know, that people go
boy band stuff.
He's posing next
to each wall has a different shot.
He's taking pictures of himself like he's in the gang.
Photoshopping himself in.
Dipping himself in.
That's what we ought to do. We ought to take a bunch of pictures of him and give him into the Lug Radio crowd. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That would be funny.
In order to get him fitted into that picture, though, wouldn't we have to, like, recede his hairline a lot more or something?
we have to have a picture for him.
We have
them
to have a what?
Words.
We have to have a picture of him that we could do that to.
We have a bunch of pictures. Just look at the OLF photos. Let me see if I can whip one up real quick, bro. Link took down all the OLF links, photo links, and never put them back.
The pictures are still up, man.
Yeah, but the links aren't. You're killing.
Well, I put a link to the page in the wiki, hoping that someone would like fill the wiki out and put the links in there, but no one did. So.
You thought wrong.
So somebody should go in there and do that, update the wiki.
here's a good picture. I'll post it in the IRC. This is a perfect picture.
Dan plus GIMP equals evil.
I did some GIMP of the new guy at work. His fiance. He sent me a picture of his fiance.
was it like the one you did from your friend from college?
No, not that one. No, he didn't do that.
That was disturbing, Dan.
What's disturbing is you remember that, you know.
It burned into my brain, man. How could you forget something like that?
I try not to remember that stuff.
Yeah, actually, I could.
Yeah, you ought to be able to put that into a picture really well, there, Dan.
Yeah.
You should do an article, Dan, like evil GIMP tricks. That would be a good article.
Evil GIMP tricks. maybe.
Got an axe to grind? Got the GIMP? Let me help you.
That's a good idea, Pat.
It is a good idea.
And you know, that you see the beauty of the whole thing is it really doesn't matter whether or not you can make it look realistic.
Right.
Because once you see something like that, the image is just burned into your brain anyway. And it's all over. You know, much like Dan's college pic that he showed us long ago, which Pat had to remind me.
It wasn't that long ago, actually.
All right, here, I'll post the terrible GIMP job I did.
Oh, jeez.
It's not pornographic at all. It's
I think if you look at the gallery on Lug Radio and you look at a seventh picture down, you could probably put the one of that you just put in there. You could probably stick him in the background of that one. Really nice, Dan.
Let me see here.
Or any of the coffee shops ones. That would work nicely, I think.
Dan is looking sexy.
He does so.
He's got that 80s mullet going.
he does. Gorkon does such wonderful stuff for us. It is so helpful to all of us. And this is how we treat him. The seventh picture down? Oh, yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah, seventh or eighth. The coffee shop one.
I don't know, I'm still waiting because they've decided to put, like, these huge photos on the page. And oh, there we go. Yeah.
Folks, if this episode is delayed, you'll know why. It'll be because of Dan doing evil things with GIMP.
On this picture right here, if we could GIMP him under the table. That look on his face under the table would be perfect.
Oh, the four of them looking down at him?
Yeah. You're looking down?
Yeah, I was thinking that one, too.
Like in Jotto's lap. Have his head, like, in Jotto's lap. That would be awesome.
Although the telephone book, the one below that, the last one, the telephone book one, or telephone booth one.
Stick him in the background there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that you've got your work cut out, Dan.
You guys are mean. Mean and despicable.
And we're having very fun. Yeah, don't forget to to go out and look at the eclipse tonight. The moon.
Got that mileage.
If you're in North America, I should say.
I can't see it. It's overcast here.
Did they shoot down that satellite yet?
I think they were trying to
today,
do it tonight. Tonight they were supposed to do that
during the eclipse.
During the eclipse, yeah, because it was able to give them the missile a better target to shoot for.
Wouldn't that be funny if they missed and blew up the moon?
Oh, they're going to miss anyways. They're shooting a missile up there that hasn't hit anything in the past anyways. That wasn't a controlled experiment, so they're going to miss it anyways. But that's my confidence in the government. I'm sorry. Your mileage may vary.
Alan, they did send a man to the moon.
Settlement. Yeah, 30 years ago, and we haven't been able to figure out how to successfully get back there yet. So
that's because it was faked.
Yeah. We just don't have the same.
Didn't Elvis do the camera work
soundstage?
On that one?
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah,
that's why they can't do another one. They just can't replicate that camera work that he did.
Yeah, there's that soundstage there. You got
to
get the right.
If you listen really hard to that to that replay of that video, you know, when they're talking one small step for man, one giant step for mankind, you can sort of hear if you turn it up really loud in the back and all home, mama, you know.
Very end. End cut. Print.
The first attempted shootdown will be at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time tonight.
The what?
The first attempted takedown shot. That's their first opportunity to fire the missile to take down the satellite. They're firing it from a cruiser out in the Pacific.
Yeah, off the coast of Hawaii, I think it is. But they got like a 10-second window, and that's it. I was reading that somewhere, and that's all they get for tonight.
That has just got to be complete crap. It has to be. I'm betting that between, you know, between the four of us and the crew of people that we have on IRC tonight, that we could probably do that. You know what I mean? We could probably build something to take the damn satellite out.
You know what it is? We have the intellect, you know? Built it.
We're just looking for the...
They built it, and it was running Linux, but at the last minute, Microsoft found out and said demanded that they put Vista on it to prove how good Vista
right.
is. And now all it does is just... It's got, like,
and that,
the guidance system is just this big-ass analog clock.
That big analog clock weighs
yes.
it down.
So,
they're afraid of somebody recovering the clock.
They're like, yeah. Wait a minute, there's no numbers on this clock.
Recovered.
When do we fire? I just keep watching the clock. You'll know.
Oh, man.
Damn. How about that silence?
So, Dan, what's the deal with your EEPC?
I'll tell you what the deal is. It's freaking awesome is what it is. We got this. The Triple E arrived at my wife's work on Thursday afternoon. And she pulled it out and called me and said, it's just this really cool, really awesome thing. It's turning a lot of heads. Everybody's remarking how cool this thing looks. Got it home. I installed the extra memory in it for her and started messing around with it. And it was just, it's a hell of a lot of fun. The device is just, it can fit in a woman's purse. It's small enough and compact and very light. And it was such an awesome thing that I said, you know, I said, well, I got to get one of these for my birthday. So I can't wait. Got to get one of these. She's like, well, if you really want to, go ahead and order it tonight. So I ordered another one. That night that we got this one, I made a mistake in the one that I ordered for her in that she wanted white, and I ordered her a black one by accident. And so I ordered a white one, so I kept the black one that came, the first one, and she's got the white
How
one.
How convenient.
Yeah.
It all works out.
Yeah. It
Gee,
does.
Honey, I'll get you the white one. We just have to order another one. That's all.
Yeah. It's really cool. Let me talk about the negatives about this thing first. The biggest negative about this is the shift key, the right shift key on the keyboard, is positioned that it's all the way on the right hand lower right hand corner, right above the right arrow key. So it's above the right arrow key and to the right of the up arrow key. So as you go to press the shift key, you tend to hit the up arrow key, which is really annoying, especially since the up arrow key does a great job of repeating the last command in a lot of the applications that I use. So as I'm typing something in and I hit the up arrow key and it's like, oh man. The other negative I would say about this is the software repository initially set up for this is not very very expansive. It is a customized version of Zandros, specifically built for the Triple E PC. The repository is essentially what you get installed on this machine from the get-go. Now, it comes with a nice array of applications. Firefox for the web browser, Thunderbird for the email clients. It has OpenOffice on here, Java. MPlayer is the movie player. Which has I was looking around for the codecs that they have on here, and I'm not exactly sure, but I was able to play WMV files right out of the box without a problem. QuickTime it would not play. That was a little quirky. It's got Flash from right installed right from the get go. I got the version the 4G. We got two 4Gs that both with the webcam. Webcam works great. It comes with an application called, what is it, UC View for just, you know, doing a quick use of the webcam and, you know, snapping a quick video of yourself or some pictures. It's really nice. It saves it in Ogthiora format. Looks beautiful. So that was, it was fun. It has Skype installed with the video capability. And I think, let me see, Adobe PDF Reader. That's pretty much the extent of the applications, if I'm not mistaken. I think a couple of games, I think Frozen Bubbles on here by default. Let me just double check.
How hard was it to install Windows XP, Dan?
I don't know, because I didn't do that. It's got some math applications and science applications. Yeah, interactive geometry, periodic table for science, games or Tux Math, Crack Attack, Sudoku, graphics, image viewer, paint, screen capture, of course, which comes standard. It's KDE based. So the easy desktop that it comes initially configured for is a like a shell of KDE, so to speak. KDE underneath, but basically it is a desktop with a huge four tabs on it. Internet, work, play, and administration. And you can click in those tabs. I think there was one extra virtual desktop, but it wasn't evident how to get to it. So you can get to a terminal if you hit Control-Alt-T, but there was no other way to get to a terminal on there. And that was pretty much it. The software... Oh, it came with antivirus software, too, which is kind of a... I don't know, like, ridiculous, I think, but...
I think that's just to reassure the Windows users that
things are safe. I don't know. I haven't removed it
yet. So now
what
exactly have you been doing with this thing, Dan?
I'm not
what have you been
finished
using it
yet.
For?
Let me finish.
All right. Okay. Keep going.
So I followed the directions because the first thing I wanted to do was get the full KDE desktop, which is the, quote, advanced desktop. So you have to fire it up and install the K server and I forget some other application. And you drop that down. It installs, you know, rather quickly off the default repositories. And you bump into KDE desktop. Everything functions perfectly on this thing. I mean, connecting to access points is beautiful. I mean, the network application, manager application they have on here is as equal to Wicked as anything else. I mean, I don't know if you guys have tried the new Wicked yet, the new updated Wicked. I mean, it is more Wicked than the Wicked was before. It is just Wicked on steroids. I love the new Wicked. It's beautiful. And this network application runs very smoothly. I ordered this. When we ordered it, I ordered a gig of RAM to replace the 512 that's in there. Unfortunately, I couldn't add to it because it only has one memory slot. So that was only like an extra $20. And also a 4-gig SD card that I ordered to put into the slot. That was an extra $20. Both of these are the 4-gig models. So
what did you order from, Dan?
Newegg.
Okay.
So when I popped open the terminal and checked it out, I think the standards install was using about 6 to 10% of the disk space available. And since then, I've installed a handful of other applications. But, of course, you know, I wanted to get standard applications that I like to use, specifically like XChat and A-Term. I prefer the A-Term. So I was looking around, and I found, you know, finding repositories that I can use for this. And there's the EEE user, EEEUser.com website has a great wiki and has a repository of software that you can use or install from. And again, you know, it's just a little more expansive than the standard repositories for the EEE. There's a handful of software in there, not a whole lot, but since it's Zandros, supposedly you can get the Zandros repositories and install the Zandros software. I couldn't find any links for the Zandros repositories right off the bat, so I just defaulted to using Debian Etch packages, and I used a couple of those, and I've been using pretty much installing what's available in there without any problems thus far. So it's been pretty simple to do that. What have I done with this? I didn't start really hacking around on it until last night, because yesterday was when my wife's came, and she was primarily using this one until hers arrived. So I didn't want to chance messing up the interface and annoying her, because we want to keep the wife happy since she let me get this. So since then, yesterday there was a big fiasco, because one of the things I wanted to do was to offload a lot of the applications or stuff that I would want to put on here onto the SD card instead of right onto the flash-based hard drive on the system. So I pulled down – one of the first things I tried doing was I wanted to see if I could use a SIP phone on this and make calls through the Astra server. So I pulled down SJ phone and ran it on here, and it works perfectly. So
cool.
To speak. It works great. I made phone calls on that, tested it. I was going to call you today, Pat, but...
You should have.
I didn't want to disturb anybody else at work, because I already made a phone call at work, and I was actually supposed to be doing work stuff at work instead of making phone calls to people. Anyway.
You mean you have to work at work?
Yeah, sometimes. Go figure. I don't know what they expect from me. So, I moved the SJ phone over to the flash card, and I went to go run it off the flash card, and that's when I noticed I didn't have permission to do that, because it was mounting the flash card, which was a VFAT file system, in with the no execute parameter set. And it auto-mounts this stuff, so I spent like 3 hours last night trying to figure out exactly how this damn thing auto-mounts. You know, I'm looking at the AutoFS documentation. I'm looking through UDEV, trying to figure out what is it that where it's auto mounting and where is it setting the parameters.
How?
No, it's not how. It is not how. When you plug the device in, well, how picks up that you plug the device in. UDEV, which controls what happens to the device, launches sets some basic parameters and. Then hands it off to a program called USB storage. Shit, what is it? Hold on, let me. It is USB storage applet. Now, what that does is, I haven't been able to find out exactly 100% of what that does, but apparently, in addition to putting the little icon on the system tray of KDE. That allows you to safely remove the device. It also must do something with allowing it to auto mount or controlling the auto mount. Now, the USB storage applet is a program created by Zandros and comes from the Zandros repositories. And lo and behold, sure enough, I cannot find the sources for that to figure out how this damn thing works. Yeah, I know. I was having a hard time. I was kind of upset last night. I'm like, it has no output or documentation. What is it doing? You know, what is it doing that I can't get in there and configure the parameters the way I want to? So I went to the EEE user, Triple E user forum, and I just, you know, I finally had enough, and I posted on the forum, and lo and behold, someone had said, well, what happens is actually there is an application in SBIN, CD USR SBIN, called what is it? Oh, P. I thought it started with a P. Oh, maybe it's in SBIN. Anyway, it's an application that controls all the auto mounting stuff, the defaults. It's not P mount, but damn it. I'm going to have to look that up in the Triple E user website in just a second. Anyway, I went in there and edited that file. And lo and behold, I could plug it in, and it was executable now, and everything was grand, and I was happy, and I could run my SJ phone and connect to the Asterisk server from wherever I am. So I was very, very ecstatic with that. I'm kind of in at a dilemma here. I'm not opposed to Zandros, so to speak. I'm kind of leery and don't necessarily trust Zandros because it is a little more closed and proprietary than I would like for a Linux distribution. Yet at the same time, I'm not so sure I want to go ahead and replace the Zandros with something like the Triple Xubuntu, which I downloaded last night and I'm all ready to have it installed. So what I think I might do, instead of replacing Zandros on here, is I might get another flash card and install the Xubuntu on the flash card and boot off the flash card and check that out without necessarily replacing Zandros. Because again, I mean, they did a fantastic job of just getting everything to work, and it works so beautifully on this. But on the reverse to that, you have far better software in the Ubuntu repositories than you do in the Zandros repositories for this device. The last hackable thing I did on this today was I started messing around with Compiz. And I installed Compiz on here to get some 3D desktop effects, which work really well. I'm still hacking around on that because it's missing some of the software, which I need to get to make everything look just peachy and perfect. But I'll get around to doing that. One of the things that they recommend is to use the Ubuntu as opposed to the Zandros default install. So that's where I am with this right now. I'm definitely playing around with it a lot more. I use it all the time. It's a great little device. I have a hell of a lot of fun with it. The wife loves hers. Wi-Fi's been great. I get Wi-Fi anywhere in the apartment that I'm at. I took a wireless router into work because we have my lead has an extra access, has an extra port, and we plugged it in there so we can get wireless access at work, and anybody can use it now. He just went apeshit over this thing. I mean, he loves it. He's all psyched. He's talking about getting one. So it's just, it's a hell of a fun device to play around on. It's the perfect size to just carry around and do stuff with. But yet, it's not a tablet kind of device, which might, you know, if they do something like that in the future, a tablet like this, of this size, would be also really cool.
So basically, Dan, you prefer to get the MacBook Air Biscuit over the Asus EE PC?
Yeah, that's what I prefer, the Air Biscuit. Well, what was the guys on the Linux Action Show said? You know, for the tax that you pay on the AirBook, you can get a Triple E. So
you can get three Triple E's for the price of an Air Biscuit.
Probably, but it's a cool device. Now, I've been talking for a little while here, and I haven't paid attention to anything in the chat, so, because I'm actually looking, trying to find that program that I was talking about. Controlling USB storage applet. The actual file that I had to edit on this thing was, I gotta go to their wiki. Killing me. All over the place. Probe device. S-bin probe device. Edit that. And that had all the rules in there for how something should be mounted. Does it have Bluetooth? Unfortunately, no. This device doesn't have Bluetooth. Oh, speaking of that, I mentioned this in the chat. Parts to my Myth TV box came today, which was really cool. I got the case and the wireless keyboard and mouse. So on a lark, I just whipped out the wireless keyboard and mouse and plugged it in, and right from the get-go, it worked without a problem. I mean, it's so sweet. It's awesome. It's awesome when you plug this stuff in and it works perfectly, but yet it comes with a disk to install the drivers to get it to work in Windows. I mean, that's just a testament to how awesome this software is. But that's what I say. Triple EPC is just the shit. I'll definitely talk more about it. I installed XMAME on here so I can play some MAME ROMs of the arcade games I own, the cabinets that I have in cold storage. And so that works pretty well, too. That was a lot of fun. I went out and I took my Fluendo codecs and I put them on here, and they work well. I went across seas to Denmark, and I installed the Win32 codecs to see if they would work in a country that I can legally do that. And they worked, and then I deleted them promptly and came back to the United States. So I was able to look at QuickTime videos while I was over there. I watched I came home last night, and I showed my wife the trailer for Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull? Castle of the Crystal Skull, the new Indiana Jones movie coming out. We watched that on here. It's just the video quality, the video playback on here is amazing. It's so beautiful. It does such a great job, and it's the perfect size, too, you know, as a portable media device to watch on the screen, and it's just, wow. Fun. I can't recommend it enough.
You don't feel that you're encumbered by the screen size when you're browsing and stuff like that on the web?
Okay, yeah. I mean, compared to looking at, like, my laptop or my workstation or regular monitor, yeah, there is it's a little more difficult to look. I got used to it pretty fast. Most sites work fairly well. You do have to do some scrolling around. You don't have a lot of screen real estate. The wife said if you go to YouPorn, you got to keep moving the thing around or use it in full screen mode because part of the video might be cut off. And but, yeah, I mean, of course, it's a lot of browsers are set, websites set their size a little larger than the screen is on here. But most sites, you know, display pretty well. I've been on our forums. I've been on my webpage on our TLLTS site, Elixir. Most of the sites that I go to, I have absolutely no problems reading. And if something goes off the screen, you know, I can't get to it, like some configuration dialogues or whatever, of course, there's always holding down the Alt button and moving the mouse, clicking the mouse button and moving the window. Because that's an easy thing to do. Any other questions?
So, do you wish the screen was bigger?
You know what? If they could fit a bigger screen in here, which I think the next one coming out is an 8.9-inch screen, and keep it the same size, yeah, that would be cool. But, I'm very happy with the size of the screen. Again, like I said, it hasn't hindered me on anything that I want to do.
Have you hooked it up to an external monitor?
No, not yet. I think my lead did, but I didn't look at it. I have not hooked it up to an external monitor. Actually, I could probably... I'd say I could do that right now.
But you bring down the show.
No, but I'd have to, like, go dig around and get the cable out. And I'm kind of lazy. So I will report that back next week.
Okay.
Battery life. Battery life is about 2.5 to 3 hours, I believe. Maybe a little more. I used it without the battery in for a couple hours the other day, 2 days in a row. So the battery, it runs about 2.5 to 3 hours. And that was multiple applications running and using web browsing and IRC and installing software and hacking around and doing a bunch of different things.
How about things like Suspend and stuff like that? Does that automatically work and you close the lid.
Yeah, when you close the lid,
it
goes to suspend. And
I know you said it fits comfortably in your purse.
Yeah, my purse. You know what? The case that it comes with is really cool. The material is like it's like a soft, stretchy material. It wouldn't be something that would protect the device if you dropped it, probably. But the case itself is sleek and pretty neat. But when I close it and take it somewhere and open it back up again, I haven't had any problems with the suspend returning to life. The audio input on this, the microphone's pretty good. Also, so you know, when I do a recording off the webcam or something like that, the microphone does a decent job. For what it is, it does a great job, I think.
Did you try installing the beta version of Skype for Linux to see if the video camera works with it?
I have it on here. I told my wife, I installed it on hers yesterday. I said, we got to try out the video chat feature on here. So hopefully I can, like, maybe do that tomorrow or something. Let's try that, but I haven't used it yet. I'm not a big fan of Skype. What I'd be more interested in using is Akiga. And I'm trying to see if actually Akiga is available. Yes, it is. Let me see. Sudo aptitude install EKIGA. And I believe Akiga does voiceover IP. Wow, look at all this stuff it wants to install. Evolution. Maybe I'll install that tomorrow. I don't want to interfere with it. I'll check out Akiga and see how well that works. Come on here. You know what? The keyboard might be small, but I like the actual feel of like typing on this thing. I like the keys. I like it. It's just like it's crisp. I like the tactile feel of the keys when I'm typing. The response on it's like, you know, I like the typing on my System 76 machine too.
The real test if someone's got sausage fingers and they can type on that thing comfortably.
Who says this?
The real test if someone has sausage fingers.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they could type on that without problem.
Yeah, if you got hammy hands,
okay,
you might have a hard time.
Send it to me.
Yeah, you might have a hard time typing on it.
But it's me. I'll try it with a
hand. Lot of fun. I like it. I like it. You know what? We don't have a song for tonight, do we?
You better go get one.
Yeah, well... Oh, and Link...
I can talk...
I just wanted to say, Link, I'm really enjoying... What did we install last week? OSSEC?
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. That's a great application. I like
good
it.
Good stuff. Did it even give you any messages yet?
Oh, man, I get a ton of messages.
when you do an upgrade, it sends you messages.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Pat logs in, it sends me a message.
Yeah, when your files change.
Your system has been compromised.
But if you're on the fence about getting an EPC, I really don't think you'd be disappointed. What disappoints me, what I don't understand is... Why the hell would anybody want to install XP on this thing? Like Windows. It just... Oh. That ruins it.
The guy at Notebook Review did that, and I berated him on the comments of his article.
What did he say to you? You elitist bastard.
No, he's like, I needed to run certain applications.
Oh. Although, you know, I wonder... I don't know how well this would do with... Gimping something. I don't know if I'd use this to gimp anything.
So video editing is completely out of the question, I'm assuming.
You could probably do that, but I don't think I'd want to.
Yeah, it'd probably take forever to render, you know, your finished video.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to waste the space on the machine with video files. All right, I'm going to go find us a show or a song so you can you can talk. Maybe I'll install GitHub and try it out. But.
I just wanted to bring up the whole HD DVD dying thing. I won't break that to death. It's already been done by everybody else in the tech community. I have an HD DVD, and at worst, I will continue using it as an upscaling DVD player for my standard DVD collection. So at worst, it's okay. I only bought one video, Transformers, because it was HD DVD only.
More than meets
when
the eye.
Came out. Exactly. Great movie, by the way. Anyhow, I noticed Eugene Aloli, who writes for OS News every so often.
Eugene
She's
Levy?
Heavily into No, Eugene Aloli. She writes on OS News a lot about, like, multimedia type stuff, and she's really into, like, video editing and all sorts of things. And she mentioned, you know, it would be great if Toshiba would open the spec for their complete line of HD DVD players. And I thought, yeah, that would be a great idea. So what I did was I created an iPetition, tried to get Toshiba to release a spec, so that one possibility that I could think of is maybe that we could turn the HD DVD player into a high-definition thin client for Myth TV. It would be a lot easier, though, if we had the specs for it. So I created the petition. If people can go sign it, I'm going to post it in the IRC right now. And I also would appreciate if people could possibly dig it. I created an article in Dig so that, you know, once we get so many people digging it, it'll wind up on the front page and we'll get more people signing the petition as well. I mean, at the end of the day, Toshiba could just basically say, you know, screw you, and nothing will happen. But at least we ask, you know, make a little effort to try to ask them. And, you know, on a lark, they might come back and say yes. So we try.
Yeah.
I also posted about it in the forum, too. So if you don't want to look at the IRC logs, you can go to our forum, and you'll see a posting in there. And one other thing, too, you guys are big Star Trek fans, right?
Yes.
I've watched it on occasion.
Yeah, you're familiar with New Voyages, right?
Yes.
Well, there's another project that's being done by actual Star Trek alumnus from all the different shows. It's called Star Trek of Gods and Men. And basically what it is, it's a three-part movie. The first one came out a couple months ago, and I've seen it's quite good. The second part's coming out in a few weeks. There's some really big names in there. Let me see, Nichelle Nichols in it, Walter Koenig, you know, people from DS9, people from Voyager, people from Next Generation, you know, people from the original series are in it. You can go to the website and download and watch it streamed live. It's pretty cool, man. Definitely check it out if you get a chance. It's called Star Trek of Gods and Men. And that's all that I got for tonight. Next week, it's just us, so get your content together. We're going to be talking for 2 hours.
The sound of silence.
Alan's going to do a segment on upgrading OS X.
Yeah, get them cricket sound effects going for next week.
Yeah, I'll have them ready.
Is it just us, or are we going to be taking some call-ins?
I wasn't planning on next week. We could do it next week, Collins, if you'd like. That's a possibility, too. Whatever you guys prefer.
I don't care, Pat. I don't care anymore.
The hell with you, Dan.
That's right. If you'd like to call into the Linux Link Embedded Tech Show. We would love to
find our number.
Just us. Next week, what's the calendar look like coming up? So we got, who do we have coming up? Pat, who do you recommend?
Well, Jono's coming on in a few weeks.
That's the 12th, so we have Just Us, and oh, that's, wait a minute. We seem to be missing a week here. February
20th. Yeah, We got an open week that we got to plug in there.
Oh, okay. I was going to say it goes from February 27th to March 12th. Unless we're taking that week off. We could do Windows Crash Radio.
Or Apple Elitist Radio.
There you go.
You know who we got to get on that we haven't had on in a while? Marcel.
True. And Marlon Dunn would be cool to get back on again.
Yeah, definitely. He lives close by. If I had his address, I could just like pop over with a microphone, make him get on the show.
That's it.
Bang on the door.
We haven't had Chester and Dave Yates on in a while, but who cares about them?
Yeah.
Cheating bastards.
Yeah.
Is Dave Yates still awake, or did he leave already?
Oh, he's dead.
Oh, no, he's still awake. And Chess Griffin's on, too. I saw him pop in for a little while, but he's over there on a lot of Linux Links talking to Dave Yates.
Yeah.
They got their own little hug and kissing going on over there. Have C4 on. We should get Marlon, though, definitely.
Devin, look at the responses to that, man. We're going to do that.
What if Marlon probably doesn't even listen to our show anymore.
I don't know. Pat, why don't you email me his number? You still have it?
I probably do, yeah.
If you can find it, email me his number. I'll give him a call sometime. See if we can sneak him on a show. See if I can convince him. He's got lots of fans in the IRC, I see. So.
Anything else? We got 5 minutes left. I got a song queued up.
I got Wicked upgraded, man. It's looking sweet.
Isn't the new Wicked awesome?
I love the little icons, man.
At first, when I fired it up, the first time, I'm like, whoa, what the hell did they do? I don't know what's going on. What do I have to do here? And I'm like, whoa, that's beautiful. And it fires up really fast, too.
Looking good.
It is.
Linux. I can't play this out.
All right. This is a song by a group. This is a song by a group called Top Dead Center. It's metal. It's called Trailer Park Trash.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. Uh-oh might be right. Actually, there was a cool article in today's newspaper about it said Trailer Park Pimp gets 3 years. Prison. Some guy who was running.
Dan is currently hiding out now.
Some guy was running a brothel at a trailer park. Got 3 years in prison. He might get out after 1 year if his behavior is good.
That's where all them high class dames.
Yeah.
Ah, trailer parks, baby. Here we go. Last words?
They're cheaper because you pay with beer.
any last words?
Thanks for listening.
All right,
good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Nighty night.
Watch out for the falling debris. Everything you need to know about a daytime talk show.
parade. Well, it makes you so much shame. You're a real within your steps. You're so low, your train of thought's trash. You get too close, it gives me a rest. You stink so bad, your train of thought's trash.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
I guess we're restarting the show.
Yeah.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
It's over.
What the heck?
We need to play more songs like that.
Yeah, it makes everybody happy, huh? I can't believe I screwed that up. I was like, wait a minute. I think I'm... This just seems too easy. Sure enough, it was.
You ruined the show, Dan.
I know. I ruined it. I was doing so
ruined
well, too.
You didn't ruin nothing. Not yet.